Well, we're back. It's episode one, season three, episode one, From the Ashes. It's been a long while, and who better to come back with? Who better than Canyon? I'll tell you who better than Canyon. Phil Bedwell.
Right? It goes Canyon, Phil Bedwell. No, it goes everyone else, Canyon, Phil Bedwell. But, you know.
Yeah.
But the third out of the entire of the universe is all right. That's
what You're my second favourite person. Everyone else was tied for first.
don't use my promo back.
No, I can't help. How you been, mate? You good?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, thanks, mate. I've been looking forward to this all day. I was a little bit late getting here, sorry about that. But I'm really excited. Thank you. It's an absolute privilege to be back on your podcast, and I'm so happy you're doing your podcast again, because I'm not just saying, it's one of my favourite ones to listen to. I really enjoy the way you question wrestling and not just like, what was your favourite match? Who are you? You know, like, you're actually asking really insightful questions. You can see you've done research and stuff in what you were doing. So I really appreciate that, and it, you know, means the most to me that we can sit here today on your premiere third season and watch the match back where I tried to probably give myself hepatitis C.
Thing is, though, mate, we grew up watching all the original Shoot Interviews, the RF video and all that kind of stuff, and I think that gave us a different appreciation for stuff like this, that they weren't just, well, the early ones were very much like, hello, what did you do as your first match? But over time, they kind of progressed and they got better and people actually had conversations. And I think those are the ones that stuck in our minds more, where the people actually kind of got into, rather than just, my name's Dave, I wrestled for 5 years for Vince, I had a title once.
Well, I think the worst thing for me was, I'm shooting it, RF video. The guy never did any sort of research. He was just like asking standard questions. And a lot of the time, especially towards the end, a lot of the wrestlers who were interviewing became quite confrontational with him, because he wasn't showing them any respect in knowing their careers. Sheiky was probably one of the best ones, because he was drunk or high off his gourd. But you had then the kayfabe commentaries by
Sean Oliver. Yeah,
he's now sticking loads of them up on YouTube, trying to get people to buy his stuff. But I think, and he's doing the podcast with Nash at the moment, and his stuff is just like, he's a funny guy. He does loads of meticulous interviews, and his timelines and stuff, he asks really pertinent questions, like his ones. Yeah, he's not even on this platform, we're giving him a pop, but his ones with Piper and Nash and stuff, or Cornette. I mean, he was the reason that Cornette got into podcasting, because the first few of his ones are at, like, Cornette's 1997 timeline is absolutely legendary. So
I was going to say, because he did the timeline WCW or timeline WWF ones, isn't he, where he's popping up a year and talk about what it was like to be in there at that time or booking at that time. And that's the kind of in-depth stuff that really is more interesting than just, hey, I saw you at a match one time with the Shark and it was really good. It's, you know, more substance.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. When you're talking to a lot of these people, they've worked so many thousands of matches, they probably haven't got a clue, you know, like, it was just a night for them, you know. It's like, you need to, if you actually get the wheels a turning, and for me, it's, if it's just going to become a hit piece or like a shoot where you're slagging everyone down, you're just pushing negativity out into the universe. If it's like you're talking about why something happened or the thought that went behind it, and someone's speaking from it in a positive light, then, you know, how you book something, how you work a match, how you put a match together, how you deal with an angle, how, you know, these things all excite me and interest me. And if it's just going to be someone spilling their guts and tearing down all the other wrestlers, it's just sort of like when you get that situation of there's some, you know, everyone at this party is a dick, but then it's like everyone at the party is a dick except you. Yeah, you're probably the dick.
you can do that in any Facebook chat anytime you want.
You know, this is it. I'd rather do something that's constructive and positive rather than just, you know, even like when you've got stuff like Cornette and that, who really rips into a lot of the current product. It's only like us, because a lot of the time he's really desperate for something that motivates him and makes him emotional. I'll talk about certain films and be sad they're not as good as they could be. But when I see something like Top Gun Maverick, I'm like, this is what I want cinema to be. When I watch a few things that have been happening on WWE recently, I'm like, this is what I remember. Not that I'm nostalgic for the old stuff. I understand wrestling has to move forward, but I want to see stuff that's positive and constructive. It's just no interest in me just to slag stuff down.
Yeah. Well, speaking of nostalgia and explosions, let's get onto the topic of the podcast. So,
yeah.
We did the inaugural one on your podcast, where we reviewed our match with the boys, which was a lot of fun. How's that done so far, numbers? I expect in the thousands, yeah?
About, it's just done over 1,000. Actually, no, it's just come up over to 500 at the moment, I believe. 499 people got back to me and they said they liked my bit, and one bit said they liked your bit, and that was weirdly named Piash. So.
Yeah, it's just my store.
It's been doing really well. The thing is, as well, it's like I'm building up the quantity of people again, but really, when I get all the feedback, I always say I really do appreciate it. And it's just, I think people like the inner workings, but also like the fact we weren't just using it as a hit piece and actually saying what motivates us. And people aren't even involved in wrestling without completely destroying kayfabe. Really like the understanding, and I'm intrigued about how you put together what is pretty much an ad-libbed stunt performance, if you want to put it like that, and, you know, with emotion and crowd work.
Absolutely. And the correct answer is a lot of drugs. That's hell. But yeah, so on to this one. So this was, I think, 2005 or 2006.
Oh, God.
One of them.
We'll be 14.
My dad picked me up on that. He was like, you're stupid, aren't you? Yes, Dad. So this was, to step it back, when we first started out, and this was in 1998, we didn't have our first tag match till 99. And our first tag match was in EWW, Extreme World Warfare at the time. And over the years, that company kind of came and went. But when this came back the year prior, they put us into a four-way match. So there won't be many people listening to this that aren't wrestling fans, but in case you're not, basically four people in that match, anything goes, everyone's fighting for everything. Whoever kind of survives, it wins. It was elimination as well. And that came down to myself and Justin Richards after you were eliminated. And after I won and became the champion, my wonderful celebration was cut short by my best friend and my tag team partner dumping me with my head twice.
Probably the stiffest pile driver.
Yeah.
But in that match, I always remember, if anyone gets a chance to watch that back, there's a bit where Justin does this move on you where he sort of, he twists your arm.
Like, he did the gym brakes lift and lifted me up and uppercutted it on the way down.
Oh, man, I still remember that. I was like, oh,
my elbow popped out and back in again. Thanks, Justin. Love it, but bloody hell. But that was that. Justin used to get extremely frustrated in matches that weren't one-on-one because too many moving parts. And the more that match went on, the more frustrated he got. So I got it at the end of it. So, yeah, that was fun.
It's got rolled up. You got your arm kicked out of the socket. Sorry about that. That's like a reoccurring theme. I think this match must have been quite refreshing for you because I got like beaten up a bit.
You got the worst of it. So this was the idea was, and this was the kind of discussion we had with management at the time. We were going to do a best of three series. And the idea would be that they would be escalating as the series goes along. Little did we know we'd actually kind of escalate halfway through. And this is the second match of the three. So the first one, we had what was quite a self-indulgent match in that sense. We were doing very Japanese style. It was great. It was really enjoyable, but it wasn't for the fans. I think that was the biggest mistake we made. So going into this one, we knew that we had to make it a bit more some of a spectacle.
Yeah.
This was billed as an extreme warfare match, meaning no countouts, no DQs, weapons allowed, anything goes, just go for it. And they said, you've got anything up to 30 minutes, go out there and do your stuff. Now, as a prelude to this, to add to the heat and the veracity of the hatred in this, we'd done an angle previously where, this is the night I lost the championship, actually, that I was doing a promo in the ring. Phil blindsided me, beat me down, used sports tape to tie me to the ropes in like a crucifix position. So I was completely defenseless. My then girlfriend got in the ring to try and stop Phil. Phil threw her to the floor, grabbed hold of a chair, and just absolutely obliterated it over my head and then kicked me in the balls as hard as humanly possible. The problem being that I'm taped to the ropes, so I couldn't clutch my balls. All I could do was hang there and whimper. And, Phil left the ring and left us both laying there, and that kind of set it all up. And I never forget, because after that moment, a lot of the fans actually said, yeah, okay, that was actually really uncomfortable, the whole thing, which was good. That's what we were going for. But they were like, yeah, that's pushing the envelope to a point there. That was uncomfortable. And it's like, not as uncomfortable as it was for me.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I cannot take my mind back there, but my attitude is, it's sort of like a lot of people, even here, like EWW had families there. It was a really weird crowd. You had a lot of families, but you had people who were very much into the ECW hardcore smart fans, which means that they're smart to the business, but they also, they want to be entertained. But sometimes people will try and be like, oh, they understand all the inner working. So they want to see the strings that the magician is pulling. So I think probably our attitude was, people knew we were friends, but if we hit each other in the angles and made it look quite grim, like it, people would start to question, well, maybe there is some real sort of like working hatred there, I guess. But my only issue now, what I would say to people is, if you want to kick someone in the balls, it's about someone selling it, like making it look like it hurts. You can hit someone as hard as you want, but if you really do knock them out, a lot of people still think it's being faked anyway. So there's no point. You're better off learning your craft and making it look like it hurts. Or, as I like to say, have it snug. So you can feel it, but it's, and you're acting like it's absolutely killing you, but it's like a hard sparring session. It's like 50-60%. I need to feel it. I can't be light as a feather. I wouldn't ask for that. I wouldn't give that out because I'm just not that talented. But on the other side of things, I'm really against people when they walk backstage, and I've seen matches where people are like covered from head to toes in bruises and cuts, and I'm like, what are you doing? There's no magic there. You're just really hurting each other in a business where people are looking for the wires.
I think a lot of it as well was 2 years previous to this, we'd done the split in the FWA. Yes. And we'd been promised this wonderful feud and this big series of matches and stuff. And of course, that was just bullshit, basically, to break us up. And we never got any of it. So I think there was a lot of frustration from our side that we knew we had something we wanted to show in terms of expressive art. And we knew that we could go to that level. We could do this Japanese style, but blending it with entertainment style. We could go heavy. We could create something special. We never had the platform to do it. So I think there was a little bit of, I'll show you. You know, we'll prove our points to this. And I think we went into this with that kind of mindset of like, we're going to show the wrestling world, one, what they've missed out on because of politics, and two, what we can actually do. And this definitely, this raised our stock on the scene enormously. No doubt about that at all.
At the end of the day, it was really annoying because me and you, when we first were a tag team, we were desperate to get teams into the FWA. And I'm not, like I say, I can't just say I don't want to do a horrible shoot and bury people, but I was very much of the attitude, it's like FWA, it's like, you promised us this and you didn't even have the balls to say to me, we're not going to book you again because of your attitude, whatever I supposedly had done to cause that level of punishment. So for me and you, I was frustrated because you just got put into the family. Not that that wasn't a good faction, it was, but you were the one just taking the bump. You were like the running bump. You weren't given a singles, which was ridiculous.
I wasn't even given a T-shirt, mate.
You know, and it's sort of like, if you're going to say, right, for your attitude or, you know, or whatever, or even just like, guys, you're taking up too much heat and I want to push other people. And with you in this organization, we can't push other people because the fans want you. But that doesn't make, we weren't, you know, like, I don't think we were arrogant. I don't think we had an attitude problem. I think we loved the business and the fans, you know, we were a commodity which you could make money and merchandise off. So why, you know, just to try and cut a team out through ego, it meant to me like, well, at least DWW appreciated us and gave us a chance to prove what we could do, you know?
Exactly. So we go into this with a big backstory. The fans there knew what was going on. People outside of watching this knew what was going on. So there was a lot of people kind of seeing, okay, what's this going to be like? Because the previous one we've seen, they've gone a bit more heavy than we've ever seen. They're putting a lot more psychology into their matches and a lot of other people around. So this was our version of, do you know what? This is going to be our Funk and Lawler. This is going to be our Bret and Austin. This is going to be our Memphis. So we went in there with that, and we basically kind of said, you know, it's nothing personal. We're going to put it in safely. We're going to hit each other safely, but we're going to feel it. And then we'll get to the details of the other stuff that happened during it. But yeah, we went in there with an idea to make this something special. So let's get on to it. Go on.
If I remember rightly, the last one ended with you doing a dive off the stairs, right? Onto me. And then that was, I sort of stumbled.
That was the final one.
That's the final one with the dive. How did the last one, how did the first one end, sorry?
So the first one was when you gave me the kick to the back of the head and the sheer drop brain buster.
Oh.
To which you said, make sure you tuck. And I went, yeah, all right. And I didn't. But yes, again, yes. You gave me the Ganso bomb. And anyone that's listening to this, you're like, what is wrong with you guys? There was a lot wrong with us. But you gave me the sheer drop brain buster, and that was it. It was a pretty much a clean go over.
Okay, I would change that these days, but yeah. I understand. Okay, so yeah, let's have a watch.
All right, so we are here early on. I'll keep the sound down because the sound's pretty horrendous on this one. But can I full screen this, Phil? Does that manage damage it or not?
Yeah, no, I don't think it does. Have a click. Oh Christ Almighty! Maybe you shouldn't full screen it. Looking at me there. Did it work?
It is, but I've lost your thumbnail, so I'll keep it back to here.
Okay, there we go. All right, so there we are. I'm walking around. Very, very narrow. There are a lot of people in there that night. And the only reason I wanted to say this quickly was just we're going to cut my promo out that went ridiculously long. But it's like everyone needs to look at the fact that you are set. As soon as you walk through that curtain, that is the most important part of the match. What is your character? Are you a star? You know, what are you displaying in that match? What makes people want to watch you? So doing that thing with a belt and very dodgy twice.
The thing is, the minute you come out, especially with what you're wearing, you're immediately putting across, right, I'm a dislikable dick. You're immediately putting that across. So people understand what you're doing straight away. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Get through this then. I cut a ridiculously long promo. Basically, I'm wearing pleather, which was big in the 90s.
You're wearing pleather. You're wearing a Playboy bunny on your outfit. It's very clear you are a dickhead, basically, which is great because we haven't got to explain that to people.
And the thing is that people, like I was always, when I'm a heel, I always, I don't want to talk over your amazing entrance because it is, you're getting people to pop you. You're obviously getting people to cheer. There are always, these days, especially going to be people that cheer the heel. So I was giving them nothing to like about me. And if someone was cheering me, I'd go out of my way to insult them. So I'd make them look like a bigger idiot. Like, you can do that with someone's, oh, you know, will you be my friend? It's like, yeah, sure, I'll be your friend. And then you make them embarrass them and they hate you even more. So, you know, I think there's too many people these days, wrestlers especially, that are frightened to be bad, fully bad. They still want to hear the cheers. They still want to get the recognition. Your recognition is to be absolutely hated. Even in my last retirement match, I wanted to be booed all the way back and be humiliated because I have got enough confidence to go, well, that's my job. I don't need to hear cheers. I don't. This is my, you know, and if I'm a good guy, it is my job to get cheers. I don't need to do all the hardcore stuff. Or I don't need to break the rules. You've got to have confidence in yourself and in your character and know what your character would do in those situations. But anyway, sorry.
And it's funny you mention that because this point here where I'm basically hugging this guy. Yes. In the order. I don't even know who this guy is. I do that for three reasons. One, because you were getting quite over as a heel at this point. And I was like, I need to make sure that I'm trying to get some people on my side because you were a likable heel in the sense of you were cocky, you were arrogant. People are going to gravitate towards that. So I had to make sure I was getting some support. Secondly, it was a little bit of, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, when I first went solo, I really had no confidence in my ability whatsoever. And I had little every now and then kind of crises of like, you know, what do I do with my hands? This was one of them. And also, I knew what we were going into. And I was nervous as shit. So I hugged this guy because I'm literally at that point psyching myself up thinking, oh, boy, we're going to kill each other in this match.
Well, look, you locked eyes. You're smiling, but you're not smiling with your eyes. You look like we got, you know, this is another important thing. We haven't lost eye contact. I can't really look. Even as you get in the ropes, you're right. You've looked to see where I am. So if you do a little taunt to the crowd, you're not going to be silly. And like I say, you're happy. Not happy, you're happy to see the people there, but you're not breaking eye contact with me. We're gonna have a fight which is important.
But this is something I was saying recently on a video as well about, you know, when we started the match out, we didn't circle each other and do that walking backwards around the ring. We didn't even lock up. Straight into a fight. It's a blood feud. Why would we not go straight into a fight?
I know, thank you, mate. That's like, you know, we hate each other. Fucking hell. Oh, excuse my friend. they're going in a bit. No, that's good. I mean, we're hitting each other.
There's no elbow points. There's no elbow points. It's all feet.
Send me off. Yes. Sorry, I'm smart enough to try and get out of the ring. Why would I keep running the ropes? We haven't gotten to a running spot. We're just having a fight.
And I'm straight after you.
Exactly.
That's one thing I hate is when people escape the ring and the person in the ring goes, oh, look at them going outside. If it's a war,
When we're on the outside, always hit each other as hard as you can. Yeah. Most important.
Apologise later on.
Exactly. Well, like I say, anyone I work with, I have that understanding. It's like, I'll give stiff, which means I'll hit you hard, but I'll do it safe. I'm not going to hit you in the lower back. I'm not going to hit you in the nose or teeth, oof, like that. I'm just going to drop an elbow right on the back of your shoulders. There you go.
And as long as you're willing to take it back, it's fine. There's nothing worse than people that will want to lump you and then won't want to take it back. But
it's an understanding, and really it's close friends that can really get away with it. Whoa, that was aiming for your head. Nice. All right, cool. We've got a spot here, I can tell you that. Oh, God, I actually did a leapfrog. Now you can show my age. Oh, nice. Just caught me. I almost fell on my ass. Oh.
I do love an atomic drop, reverse atomic drop, and a Rude cell. Look at that Rick Rude cell. Beautiful.
Oh, and again. But you see, stuff. Right, okay, this is important. That you are doing stuff that anyone, that the crowd will understand and react to. I always probably shouldn't give away some really good spots here, but anyone, even like families that have had to bring their kids along, always weirdly react to someone getting hit in the nuts on the top rope, atomic drop, reverse atomic drop, you know, on the outside, actually put it in a little bit stiffer so people can really sort of see it and feel it. You'll get reactions then, and that's what you want to get. You don't want to get the people who are there to actually see it. You want to get the people who have sort of been dragged along to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly that. Anyone watching this that's even 3-4 rows back can see that you're hitting a full-on metal guardrail, that I'm dropping all my weight on you. And even if they're not fully into it, or they're a little bit, these guys, they're watching this and they're going, okay, these guys are going for it. And we're not having to use barbed wire or light tubes. We're not having to use ridiculous neck bumps.
No.
2 minutes into the match, we're just having a fight.
Exactly. And like I think Cornette said it about, like, furniture happens by accident rather than setting up convoluted spots.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop begging, like, not forgetting hitting you in the nuts.
It's
not
so forget- nice to see as well a beg off spot. You don't see that anymore.
Nope. Show arse, you know. If we did have the sound on that.
I show this to people on a regular basis.
It's just the one on the head.
Because I had this dumb idea. Yeah, Phil hit me on the back of the head with the chair, which is really dangerous. But
knowing what we know about CTE now, it's interesting, isn't it? How many years
before we understood it. But
yeah,
I remember that shot to the back of the head. I just laid there and thought, whoa, that sucked. It wasn't bad. I wasn't like lost or anything, but I was like, oh, that was not enjoyable.
See, my attitude here as well, when people go, oh, why wouldn't you go for the cover? He's beat. It was like, we hated each other in a working way. So, like, it's adding to the damage, you know? This is it. It's not enough. We want to destroy each other.
I've rocked you around the place for the past 5 minutes. You need to take a breather.
Yeah, exactly.
This is now, look at your pace. Your pace is slow, and you're like, you're getting your breath back. You're getting feeling back. I've been knocking the piss out of you for the past 5 minutes. You need to get that back.
Yeah, exactly.
We remember the moment of that child in the front row, didn't we, Phil?
Oh, God, yeah, he wet himself, didn't he? There was a kid cheering. Like I say, a really mixed audience of families and like people there to see the violence. And there was a little kid, and a bit later on, and then Paul hit the railing as hard as he could, and the kid sort of wet himself with fear. Again, not proud of that. Maybe should have enjoyed it a little bit, gave it a little bit more to work with. But like I say, even though this is hardcore, we're not forgetting the fans. We're not becoming self-indulgent. We're making sure they're staying with the match. And, you know, not, like you say, going up through the gears. We're having a brawl. This is, I think we learned from our first one, and it's a lot less self-indulgent.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, we've gone to the outside, not because of shortcuts. We've gone to the outside here to show the people this is personal.
Yes.
And again, this is another one of the stupid ideas that one of us had. Well, I could just kick you. I could hit you with a chair. Now, I'll tell you what, I'll combine the two.
And I'll kick a chair into your face. That was, like what they called a face wash. I forgot what
it's a face wash, with the sandwich of the chair. I mean, I remember the noise that made. It was like a gunshot.
It's like, I think, you know, like I've watched a lot of like old hardcore stuff recently, or like violent stuff where they'll just do the whole thing with punches. And I understand that, you know, a lot of Lawler stuff, a lot of Bruiser Brody stuff. But yeah, keep one foot in the past, but one in the future as well. You know, you've got to make sure that you're appealing to today's audience, but also not doing so much that no one can top it, or to top it, you've really got to start injuring yourself. You need to be doing it. Don't forget the rules of your universe,
But the thing is, as the match goes on and we see it, it's not only chairs we use. It's not only brawls on the outside we use. We do a ton of other stuff.
Trying the hard way, you and I.
Yeah. So at this point, I'd busted open and was barely bleeding. So the old school mentality is, if it's not bleeding, let's make it bleed. So I'd said to you before, and if I don't start bleeding, well, just punch me in the cut. Weirdly, yeah. I don't bleed very well.
Yeah, unfortunately, I bled all too well.
Oh, this is one of your favourite bits, Phil.
Made up for it. Oh, like knee drop.
When you feel knee drops me, my head does a 180 for no reason.
I'm amazed how knee drops I've dropped and I can still like use my knee. Oh, is this the...
Not yet, no. This is the one I struggle out of.
Good stuff. Like I say, this, you're still keeping the fight alive. You're still, even though you've taken, you know, it's, I like this because it's an arrogance and also a viciousness that's bringing you back into the match. I feel like you've not had enough. And you know, like I say, we're working it. It's not just going from one spot to another. There's things to join the dots, which is so important.
But you also, you're giving them a reason to still cheer for me. You're giving them a reason to try and get behind me, because at the moment you're kicking my ass. So I've got to have a little bit of hope. And in this kind of a match, my hope doesn't need to be moves and spots. My hope needs to be fighting you.
I honestly think these days, the more I watch matches and the more I sort of refine my style, matches shouldn't be... You can have a few spots, but for the most part, the crowd don't follow it as much and it doesn't feel as organic. You really want to let people... just enjoy the moment. And if it gets too convoluted, it's like... When comedians, they know where they're going and they're going to tell the joke, but even if they've memorized it all, they'll break it up into chunks so you can follow it. They're not just trying to go through all the different points and come to the punchline as quickly as possible, because you miss all the, you know, they might add a little bit. They're just going to go with the moment. And that's so important, I think, these days, going from not planning anything the way we were taught to planning quite a lot to now having a nice mix between the two.
Now, important point here for anyone watching this, Jim Cornette mentioned this recently in one of his podcasts. The most important thing when you're doing the figure four around the ring post spot is the recipient to make sure they grab the person that's putting it on's leg so they don't bang their head on the floor. Yeah. I didn't do that. Luckily, Phil used the railing, but I didn't. I'm sorry for that. I didn't grab your foot properly.
That's all right.
Luckily, you didn't donk yourself.
Time, and I knew the railing was there. The thing is, it's all like, I'm sorry, I think Jericho did it and buggered it. He put his legs around the wrong way.
Yeah.
Phil says he's better than Chris Jericho, shocker.
I wouldn't argue that at the moment, to be honest, but there you go. But yeah, I mean, it's, again, you took your time with that. That's why it didn't go wrong. And I didn't fight back. I knew what was coming. Take the spot. I've taken a shot to the balls. Why would I be struggling out of that? It gives you time to put it on so they can see what's coming.
And like I say, for me, it's like, okay, it's got to a point where, unlike other matches, we really, really want to hurt each other. But it's not like, okay, we're using a chair, but I'm using a chair to work your knee. I'm trying to destroy you, basically. It's not enough just to win. I want to make sure you can never get back in the ring again, or anytime you get up in the morning, you're going to think about this match, you know? So it's using weapons, but not just trying to drop you in your head 50 times, because it would then break the world of wrestling. It's like, well, how can anyone take that much, you know? It's sort of like being sensible with what you're doing. Oh, thank you, Triple H, for this, I guess.
What's good about this as well is this breaks the chair. So anyone that says... wrestling's fake, it's not all real. Anyone that's ever used one of the chairs in this country, which are far thicker than the ones in the States, and they're heavy. Sound is all over the place on this. For my weight to break that, it's quite considerable. Old school crippler crab, that was moody. It was fine, but I could really feel that, because the pressure is enormous on that move.
You've bridged up out of it, which is good. But this is what I mean. It's sort of like punishing you, and also at the same time, well, you know, like I say, just wanting to hurt each other. But there's, but you, like I say, you know, like there's not We're not worrying about spots. There's a hell of a lot of you're taking a hell of a beating, basically. This is what I mean. Not enough that it looks ridiculous that you could carry on, but you couldn't carry on, sorry. But at the same time, making sure that we are actually being sensible with it. I'm just, you know, using weapons and stuff, but making sure that we're doing it. And I'm just completely working your spine up and down. It seems.
See, the thing is as well here, though, right? You're working me over, you're breaking me down, but it's all done with a decent amount of time. Like, you're not rushing anything. You're making it count. You're making it sink in.
I think at this point, I said, if you just quit on yourself now, that I'll let you go or something like that. And you just, it was a really good way to get a pop. It was everyone goes, oh, we need to do a heat spot involving moves. You just went screw you or F you and you got the crowd cheering for you again. And
that was the thing. It was like, you're being the coward here by saying, I'm giving you a way out of this. You can quit and I'll stop beating on you. One, that comes across as arrogant. But two, that's like, you know full well that if I get a chance to come back, I'm going to kick your ass.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's cowardly on both levels. But then, of course, being the extreme crowd, I tell you to F off. And it's like, right, okay, have a kick your face back.
Oh, Jesus. So, but... You know, one thing I'm really proud of as well, I'd seem into it. We're not doing loads of running spots. I think this is definitely different from the first one. We've really sort of like it's paced really well. Oh, I've gone from a Hurricane Rana, but nope, almost took a bump. Well done, Phil. Is this your senton?
Yeah, this sucked. This really sucked. I used to do this a lot as my spot of hope, missing it. But it always sucked. I did that once to Martin Stone, and we hadn't called it. And I just ended up on the second rope and I said, I'll do something. And as I was up there, I thought, I actually don't know how to pull this.
Oh,
so I just landed on him full whack and he wasn't too happy about that. But
was it better than Steve Austin's one?
Yeah, it was, because it was just full on. I love this because this is you showing that you're not just a roller. You're not just shortcuts. Look at that. Perfect top rope Frankensteiner. Beautiful.
Thanks, mate. Really appreciate it.
This
is something I need to say as well. It's like, again, being heel. Okay, I'm doing a cool move, but I'm not giving the crowd any reason to cheer me. I'm straight away after doing it, I'm like insulting them. I'm railing on you. It's like that. All right, you're gonna, if you want to, it's not like heels can't do anything athletically impressive. But you have to just be like, do it. You're hated so much. People go, okay, fair play, that was good, but you're still a prick. And now, okay, this gives me a reason to get the table, because you've said to me, I'm not going to give up no matter what. So it's like, all right, then I'm going to end you. Yeah. And in a wrestling way, we end each other by dropping each other from the table.
I mean, this thing, to explain this, it doesn't need to be any more complex than you want to hurt me.
Yeah,
that's as simple as that. You want to punish me.
But keep it simple.
Yeah, but for context, for people who are watching this, or even the people that are listening to it, that is a pasting table.
Yeah.
Designed to hold wallpaper, not designed to have any amount of weight. And if you put paint on that, you're risking it snapping in the middle, because it is just the thinnest wood imaginable. But of course, with a budget, that's all we could get hold of. And we were both poor and we had to buy it ourselves.
Yeah.
But here, you're like, okay, we're going to go to a different level here. I'm going to brainbuster you out of the ring through this table.
And this, we knew this was important. This was the big spot. So we needed to build anticipation for it. That, another thing that grinds my gear these days, people will go straight into this spot where we're brawling and we're hitting each other very hard.
Now. Yeah, this was ridiculous. We hit each other so hard here.
His elbows are poof, poof.
Yeah, they were just like legit hard as possible.
Oof, I almost held onto the ropes the wrong way. I didn't know. Oof, and there we go. Pole driver
off the apron.
I remember,
which is mental.
Jetta seeing that, Vicky, and just going, looking around at me and going, Philip, you could have died. Just like, no, nothing else about it. You could have straight up died. And it's just like, but you took complete, I can say, you took complete care of me, you know? Like, there comes a point in wrestling where you can weigh up all of the, filming me maybe doing something now. You can weigh up all the averages and go, okay. But sometimes in art, you have to just go, fuck it. You know, I was saying, you've got to bleep that, but you've just...
No, it's fine.
This is what I think in this match. It's sort of like, I cared about you this much and my art and the work that I'm like, well, we need to make something memorable here. And it was my first ever blade. The chair hitting me afterwards didn't hurt it either. But for me, it's sort of like there was a point where I was realized I was going to blade. And I think blading is overdone now. You had been kicked in the balls, as you said earlier on. I'd insulted your then girlfriend. I'd beat her up. I had beaten you in the first match. So it's like if you look at it, not just a singular match, but three matches, the first match was heat. The first match was me beating you up and making you try and quit on yourself. So the second match is about me showing my ass. It's about you getting your revenge. Maybe not all the way, because it's got to lead to the third match, but you've got to, what I wanted to do to you, make you quit on yourself, make you never want to come back into wrestling again, you're going to do on me. And I owed you this. And in a way, I owed myself this. I got a few people after this, wrestlers, saying you didn't know what you were doing, or you don't have a blade and stuff like that. No, I knew exactly what I was doing, but I was just willing to go there. It wasn't as much as blood that come out now. It wasn't bad a couple of days later. I had to wrestle again after this. That's another story I can tell another time. But like, it was done for a reason. It was done, and it, you know, years later people still talk about this. We can still reminisce about it. So was it worth it? Yeah.
So, I don't think anyone would say to Eddie Guerrero, when that big massive juicy hit with JBL, oh, you don't know how to blade, you're not doing that right. In War Games 92, when Dustin Rhodes was just a crimson mask, I don't think anyone would have said to him, oh, you're stupid, you overbladed there. It's purposeful for the purpose of what that purpose is.
Sometimes you've just got to close your eyes and feed it.
You've got to close your eyes and feed it, yeah. But the other thing as well, like, with this blading spot as well here, we knew that we had to make them want to see the third match.
Mm.
And you have to take it to another level. People might look at it and go like, oh, it's a bit much. Well, no, because it's about telling a story. You look at Die Hard. John McClane kills a lot of guys. He's a cop. You can look at it and go, Jesus, you shouldn't be killing people. Well, to be fair, he did. They did kill loads of people in the building. They did take over the plaza. They did threaten to kill his wife. He's got a justification for being a bit pissed, so that's why I've got the justification to try and do you serious damage. But this is making them understand, oh, okay, this good guy, this white meat baby face, he's willing to go to a dark place to do what he's doing. Then all of a sudden that adds a level to it.
And in a way, this was a good thing, because it gave you that heat. Like, it's all right being a white meat baby face, but I think even baby faces have to have an edge. They have to have something. It's like, they, you know, all heels have to be justified. And there has to be, in a way, a goodness in them. That even if it's something that, you know, even in their own self-belief, they believe they're doing good. They're doing right for themselves, even if it's completely selfish. And with good guys, there has to be, if you push me far enough, I'm going to go there. You have to have that resolve of going, I can go dark. You know, it's sort of like you've taken it. And that gives you that edge that makes you a cool baby face. It's not like you have to hit each other in the nuts and stuff and never observe the rules of being a baby face. Quite the opposite. But you just have to have that edge so fans can believe in you. They know that you're not going to take any prisoners when it comes to it.
But also, again, it's like the crescendo of a song. You know, I've done that pole driver through the table. I don't then suddenly get some barbed wire out and clothesline you with that around my arm and then put it on your head and pole drive you off the top rope and then set fire to you and stamp on that because I have to go to all these extra levels to get the match over. There's one. You hit the crescendo of the song and then you come back down.
Yes. Yeah, and, you know, we needed to... We knew this was going to be the big spot, so it's not like we're planning tons of stuff after this. I think maybe when we get to it, I can sort of. I told you at one point that I was going out a little bit. I'd lost so much blood, so you know, I didn't know. I'd never. This was my first blade. I'd practiced it one time at home.
Well, this was the point where we've got the title of the podcast. That is at this point, I kind of said, Phil, you don't look too good, because at this point. It wasn't yet. No, because at the moment, I do that, which is
that was the point of the chair hit me right in the cup, which is brilliant because it really opened it up. Like, it was a good blade, but then I remember at one point here, there's a woman in a white dress. There she is on her left hand side, and as I looked at her, the whole front of her dress turned pink, and I was like, oh Christ, I'm a.
Well, this is the thing. This is similar to the JBL on Eddie Guerrero's spot. At this point, you were bleeding okay. And I was like, oh, he's got a good bit of colour there. I said, I'm going to give you a chair shot. I got a bit carried away. And as we'll see here, and I'll put the sound on.
Yeah.
Ready? It's like a dull thud. And that broke the chair seat and opened you up like a can of mustard.
Yeah,
don't get mustard in cans.
Can of mustard?
Yeah.
Oh. There's me bleeding on the woman. And it was interesting because there were people there that think it's fake. And when I was bleeding everywhere, they're looking for the blood capture or something like that. I remember at that point, yeah, I wiped. You never should wipe colour. I learned afterwards. You know, if you've got a crimson mask going on, you'd never wipe your head because then you take all the blood away. Both my contact lenses are filled up full of blood. So everything was a pink mist. So I had to wipe my face to try and get some of the blood away. And as soon as I did it, it felt like a warm shower again. So I was like, okay, this is really coming out now. I wasn't panicked. I just felt like we're doing a good job. And it was weird because the families went a little bit quiet, which, you know, in retrospect, sorry, but this was not that sort of match. But people were murmuring now where no one was bored. Everyone was very, very interested. But it was like, OK, it's hit that next level of believability. People were thinking this is quite real now.
But this is something I love. And this shows how good you are. Right. You're crawling back to the ring. You're doing it on your knees. So you're up and visible. Everyone can see you. You come up. So everyone can see the whole time. You're not on all fours. You're not crawling and letting it bleed on the floor. What's the point of bleeding on the floor? The other two sides of the ring can't see it. Mm. But you're up. You're crawling on your knees. So everyone can see it. And they're going, oh, God, he's bleeding a lot. So it's extremely visual.
I don't know where I got that from, but I've always had a thing about as I'm doing it, it's like I'm thinking to myself, how does this look? So yeah. If I'm selling, I'm always aware as a baby face, you know, as a good guy or a bad guy, baby face or heel, how is the crowd going to react to this? And I'm listening to it in real time. Do they care? Are they booing me? If I'm a bad guy, are they cheering me? Are they happy I'm getting beaten up? Are they indifferent? Are people talking amongst themselves? You always got to be working. You've always got to be listening. And if it's not working, change it up.
Adapt. But you look at that, like you've already wiped your face off once and within seconds it's back and you are covered.
They had to throw away the ring canvas after this, didn't they? Yeah, there's me wiping it again. I'm like, yeah, this is heavy. I mean,
at this point, this as well, I got a bit carried away because I remember that being really stiff on you. The second one, actually.
It's your comeback in it. So, like, you're here already. I mean, this is fair enough, you know. It's like, I'm just selling it and I'm just sort of like aware that, I mean, I can feel it. Oh, God, you're doing the 10 punch, which is great, you know. This is. Your revenge, this whole match up until this point has been healing you. So you're finally getting it back and you're making sure that blood is going. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, we're not trying to do a million. We're not doing sleeps and leaps now. We did a few whips and stuff like that, but you're just kicking the hell out of me. There you go. I think I managed to.
Yeah, put it right in the face.
Not for long.
No.
Oh, drop.
Really kick. Low drop kick right in the bread basket. No,
at least it wasn't in the head again. So yeah, you're. Oh, Jesus. Nice.
I remember you saying, yep, we'll do the moonsault. We've done this in training. But understandably, you weren't able to pull off a full-on moonsault. And luckily, you were okay with that. But look at it back.
I over-rotated. I landed on my forehead. And now, I remember I said to you, that is the point where I said, Paul, I think I'm going out. Bleeding a bit. And yeah, and now blood.
The thing is, you can see there, for anyone that's watching this, you can see it literally running off your chin like a tap. It is running down your face from your head and running off your chin. I mean, I've not seen a juice job like that. People talk about eddies and they talk about mooters. I mean, that's up there at the top. You're literally already laying in a pool of your own blood within seconds. It's at that point I thought, I remember saying to you at this point, like, mate, are you okay? You're like, yeah, fine. We're good to keep going. I was like, oh, I don't know. I was getting considerably worried at this point. The ref's getting considerably worried at this point.
The ring crew are getting considerably worried because they're like, we're not going to be able to use this canvas again.
Yeah.
There we go. And, oh, God. It's like, the thing is as well, I was sort of glad that we went home a little bit early. We had to call the end it because there can come a point where you'll beat on the heel so much, it starts to turn you almost bad guy because it's like, oh, come on. It's like, they'll get sympathy. So it's doing it at the right point. So.
But look at your sell of this. Selling outwards, arching your arms, showing your body up to the crowd to show that it's hurt your back. So many people miss out on that now. They just dead sell it.
it just frustrates, and you keep selling it, you know. It's like if you're bleeding or whatever, it's like this is a few one of the few times where I can sort of be collapsing and dead center. But even though, look, one leg is up and stuff, you're selling exhaustion and fatigue, but you make sure, look, dragging me to my feet. It's important that you're just not, oh god, you're not just going into the somewhere Ross Jones is coming. You're not just going to the next spot. You're just, now it's my turn to get punished, you know?
Yeah.
And this was good actually. We went to this a little bit earlier, and this is a thing, so it gets to the finish. So it's a big enough bump for you to take that it buys me some time. And we, yeah. But like after this, we both agreed, like, yeah, you know, let's go home early.
The fundamental thing there as well, when you've got a weapon, smack it against a ring apron so people know it's real.
Yeah, very true.
Just remember setting this up and thinking, oh god, this is like standing paper up.
Yeah, it really, yeah, like over time they got bigger tables, but now tables that don't break. But you know, back then it was like, I actually can't believe I was able to do this at this point. I was able to land on my feet like that.
Incredible.
We do sell meaty, man. And then, but you know,
it was at this point you said to me, you went, yeah, we're gonna have to go home now, because you were like, you were starting to feed it. I remember you picked me up here and you went, because I'd previously said to you, are you okay, carry on? You went, yeah. At that point you went, yeah, we gotta go home, mate, I'm done
selling it. And that, you know, like I can't get back into it. And also as well, like I say, I'm aware that the crowd were reacting to it, but I didn't want them to start caring for me. And also as well, I didn't want it to become too uncomfortable. That level of blood loss, you owe it to the audience. They're there, they bought a ticket, they want to be entertained. You owe it to the audience not to make them feel bad for not whatever wanting to come again, going, oh, that was disgusting, you know. You don't want it to become gratuitous.
Yeah, exactly.
Managed to break out of this DVD on you, I believe.
Yeah. Okay, you definitely driving me straight into your pool of blood.
Yeah, nice of me.
I was like, oh, we've got technical struggles. The DVD knocked out the feed.
There we go. And I'm still, I can't. I'm trying to get you from my finish, but I'm on rubber legs. I've barely got anything left in me. I can't get you up for the brain buster. So a cross-armed Widdish.
And here's the key thing. As the camera closes in, you see the blood spurting out of your head like a faucet.
Do you know what? I intentionally didn't watch this back to today. And without blowing our own trumpets, it's like it didn't. It's not good. I don't know. Maybe with today's goggles, it's sort of like it wasn't gratuitous. We didn't try and take it. Yeah. Now.
Yeah. Paul, if anyone watching this can see the cursor, watch the top of Phil's head. You literally see it going and spurting out when it gets a bit closer. Poor Vicky, bless her. She got in there and literally just went, I'm having none of this. I'm not getting near this.
So we needed to come up with an angle why people were stamping on me. Why people would want to see a paintball. Try and do a third one. And it's sort of like, well, we need to give them a taste of the level of violence. And look, like, this is, mate, this is your sort of about, like, it's an Austin moment in a way. You're like, that's not enough. You're like, you want to beat me up. You want to keep on going. You're enraged. So it's like, Jesus, Paul's kick ass. You can only push Ash so far. And,
decision.
That is still burning, so it was like a disqualification.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That was honestly, on our part, that was a really good idea because they wanted to see me get my retribution. I got my retribution, and it was snatched away from me.
You still haven't won the match. You won. Yeah. You won the battle in a way, but you didn't win the war. I even though it's a really interesting way of putting it, especially in EWW, even in an Extreme Rules match, Paul got disqualified.
Yeah, which is incredible. This is an achievement, isn't it? But also, I mean, and then obviously I just get angry now and just call him an arsehole or whatever. But yeah, I mean, at the end of it, like, I'm standing tall as such, but I look like I've been through a war.
Yeah.
You have been through a war and almost killed, but even on the way backstage, you still held your hand up as if to say, I still won. So yeah, people are like, they want to see that now.
Being helped to the back and having a limp arm held up and stuff like that. I remember, like, the next day. So the next day I was being a good guy. So I was just wearing my newbie trunks. So I put my pleather trousers in a bag. And bin bag. And then, so the day after, I was living in a flat at that point. my bachelor pad, and I put the pleathers in the shower with me and like started to rinse them down, and it just smelled of steak. It just smelled of raw steak because the amount of blood. And even though they were pink bunnies, they always, after that, they looked quite cool because they always had like a visible blood stain on them.
Yeah.
So like, this match made my trousers go extreme.
But I never forget when I got backstage, obviously I rushed straight away to see where you were, make sure you were okay. And I couldn't find you anywhere. And I walked past what was the bar area of the nightclub. And the woman that was working on the bar came out and she walked out and saw me and screamed. And I was like, Jesus, don't look that bad, do I? As a facially. But she looked and she went, oh, my God, are you okay? Are you okay? What's happened? Where? And I was like, what do you mean? What? I'm fine. I'm looking for Phil. Is he okay? She went, but you're covered in blood. And I looked down and I was pink from your blood. You'd lost that much.
It's the only thing annoying with that filming. It was like whatever the club lights were slightly orange or pink, right?
It was the red canvas made it worse. How
much blood is in there. Yeah.
The red canvas reflected and made it a lot worse.
Mm.
But I then remember you then wandered out of a massive plaster on your head, a big pad, and you just went, what? I was like, are you okay? And you went, yeah.
You know, this is the thing, like even to this day, I'll say this to everyone. I've always managed to finish all my matches. I can't actually, like anyone I've ever worked with, if I ever hurt anyone in a match, I feel absolutely terrible about it. I will hit hard and you will hit hard, but at the end of it, it's like we were both able to move the next day, and I'm not breaking kayfabe in doing that. You know, you must understand that people, like, they work a lot of times a year. So anyone that sort of beats themselves up heavy enough that they can't move the next day, it's like, guys, what are you doing? Like, this on like a scale of 1 to 10 is up there, like a 10 out of 10 on like levels of brutality. But I actually worked the next night. And if it wasn't for someone saying to me, duck a clothesline and punching me in the head, I think I called that in, and splitting me open again, we would have done a match. And I was just doing an opening match as a babyface. You can work up and down the card. It's like, but, you know, be sensible with what you do. Make people believe it. But at the same time, you're helping each other in there, yeah? You're looking out for each other. I said to you, Paul, this is going a bit far now, you know, I feel a bit rough. And we looked after each other, even though we were absolutely paneling each other, so, you know.
Well, that's the other thing as well. You know, we had intended to do more. We had planned to do a few more things before the finish. When you said, I can't do anymore, we need to go home, okay, let's go home. Yeah. Let's jump straight to the straitjacket lung blower and let's go home. We're done.
So what I mean, we can, this, and this is so important as
there's,
well.
There's no, like, I've got to get my shit in.
Oh, you know, it's like, I'm not going to bury people. I understand it. And it's like, look, I get this, right? I understand when I was coming up through the business, there was a few times in backstages with me where people were coming up to me, sometimes helpfully, sometimes unhelpfully, giving me advice. And I listened to it all. I thanked them for it. Some of it I used. Some of it I've not ever used. Some of it, Mal Sanders, I've never stopped using. But it's sort of like, for me, it's, you know, you take what's useful to you, reject what is useless, but always keep it in your back mind, because even if in the back of your mind, because even if you don't use it now, maybe 10 years down the line, maybe you'll be talking to someone else in the locker room and you'll pass that on, and that will be like eye-opening to them. Yeah. All I'm saying is, like, even if you don't want a very long career, even if you want to leave this very quickly or whatever, don't understand that as soon as you stop wrestling that your body's going to start working again and everything's going to be normal. You've got to take care of yourself long term, you know?
Yeah, it's, people remember moments. People don't remember a body of work, like the minutiae of it. They remember moments.
You might remember how they made you feel.
Exactly that. The two things with that match as well, like you said, you worked the night afterwards. We went up to, like, I was at Northampton or something, and you worked that night. So Sunday, which was 2 days afterwards, I did a TLC match. Yeah, I was a little bit sore, but not anything that slowed me down or anything. I was a bit tired by Monday, but that was it, because every shot was safe. Everything we put in was done safely. All the moves were done safely. Your head was nowhere near the floor without pile driver. That suplex through the table, I landed perfectly square. And that was the difference. We looked after each other and we knew how to work. Yeah, it was an extreme match, and it's more extreme than most matches I've seen. But no injuries. We didn't come out of any problems. Because, again, it's like the analogy I always use of the magician on stage. If he actually cuts a woman in half and there's entrails and blood all over the floor and he goes, ta-da, he hasn't done anything impressive. He's committed murder. It's when he pulls a woman apart and goes, look, and then puts her back together again. You go, well, that's clever, isn't it?
I think the thing, yeah, and I think the thing that did me, that caused me to have to slow down for a while in my 30s and stuff, wasn't the style I was working or the people I was working. Unfortunately, when we were coming up through the business, some of the rings were bloody shocking. Like, there were still, some of them, for the most part now, if the company I was working for, if they've got a crap ring, I just won't do it. Or like, I'll really order the match. Back then, you know, me and you, as a new breed or trying to make a name for ourselves, feuding with each other, it didn't matter what the ring was like. Like, we would give it our all. And I think that's the biggest thing as well. Be sensible to each other, but also understand your working conditions. If that ring isn't safe, then, you know, don't kill yourselves. Like, you can have it, understand that you can work a match and give the crowd a satisfaction and enjoy it and not have to, like, oh, I'm going to land on my head and the spring's gone, you know? I remember that hearing that so many times, Paul. You'll probably get this as well back in the day, where we'd be ready to go out and someone would go, oh, one of the balls has come up, which means one of the wooden balls has come out, or the padding's moved, or the spring's broken, which means it's a lot more dangerous to, like, take bumps in that ring. And we'd go, well, we've just got to do it anyway. And it's just like, why, man? It's like scary times, you know?
Well, there was that match we did at three-way where the spring went, and I come off the top rope with a frog splash. And as I landed, my left arm from elbow to fingertips went numb, and my right arm from elbow to shoulder went numb because I landed so solid on this non-giving ring. And I'm like, that's no way to live. That's not good. But you watch our match there. There's no dives to the outside. There was no crazy bumps on the floor. There was no backdrops on the floor. There was no bumps on the apron or anything like that. All the bumps were measured and safe. The only risky bump by any stretch of the imagination was the pile driver off the apron. And it was completely safe.
It's very true. And also, as well, everything we did, we sold. Like, yeah, when I kicked the chair, I mean, this is it. In my mind, I don't know why, but I think maybe because some of the stuff I watch now, I think, oh, we were just going from spot to spot, but everything makes sense. It's like, when I kicked your head through that chair, you sold it for a significant amount of time. When I, you know, there's no, you know, like when I gave you the backbreaker on the chair and stuff, we're not up minutes later doing the sleep leap and running spot. In fact, we did a couple of leapfrogs at the beginning and that was it. It was actually a lot less running and stuff. And it's like, understand the matches, like, you go from a 1 to a 2 to a 3 to a 4. Once you're at a 4, you can't go back to 1 again. So if you're getting to a point where you've done the fire up and you're fist fighting, you're not going to go back into a tie up. It's like, you, and similarly, if you've done running spots and you're both athletic, but now you've started hitting each other with the big moves, you're not suddenly going to have the wherewithal to run ropes and leapfrog out of the way. If anything, if you do a running spot and you bumped into each other, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because you're fatiguing. It's like, you've got to, again, I keep going back to this, the rules of your universe, do the right thing at the right time that makes sense. If it's like, oh shit, we forgot that, we better try and get that in now. No, leave it, reject it, because it won't make any sense. Well, and as soon as,
I was going to say, I dropped you nuts first on the top rope. I didn't send you off the ropes after that to do a running spot.
It's like, I'm brushing around it here, but there was a match on AEW. I think it was Aleister Black against Cody Rhodes. And they always talk about that they hit his finish. Aleister Black hit his kick finish. And then a couple of minutes later, they're doing a running spot off the ropes. It's just like, and listen, it's today's wrestling style. It's a video game style of wrestling. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm just saying, for me personally, it doesn't make sense. And actually, when I now and again mention I'm a wrestler to people, actors or just casuals in shops and stuff, like, they will just sort of say to me, they don't get it now, because it becomes something to almost sneer at, because it doesn't make sense, or it's become so much of an in-joke. And I'm not burying wrestling here, but it's just, it needs to make sense. Like, even a Marvel film now needs to make sense. When they start to go off script a little bit, it's like they're not selling as much. Not as many people go and repeat see it, because they're breaking their own rules of the universe. There's no sense of danger. If you always know the hero's going to be safe, there's no drama there, so people will become less invested in it. If you do a bunch of moves, but then you're no selling it at the end, or you just pop straight back up and walk backstage, then the crowd are like, well, I was silly to believe in that, really, because he's obviously not hurt, you know?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely that. But, you know, with that match, I think we went into that trying to tell a story and trying to tell our story. But rather than the first match was purely our story for us, this was our story for the fans and for the universe that we were in. And I remember after that match, we had a lot of people contacting us that were I'm aware that we were still doing a particular amount of stuff because we'd left the FWA.
Mm.
And they were like, oh my God, these guys are still around. And oh my God, look what they're doing now. And it got a lot more eyes on us again. And it really kind of reinvigorated us for quite a few more years. And I think it earned us a lot in the eyes of a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a very good point you raised there. Why are you doing it? Are you doing it? But it, like, don't get me wrong, don't half-ass it. Every never assume the crowd knows who you are. And even if it's a small crowd or a massive crowd, they've all paid to see wrestling. So give them a good show. But on the other side of things, pick your spots. Is this going to get you notoriety? Is this the night where you need to pull all the stops out? Because this is going to get you a lot more bookings, sell you a lot more merch, make you a figurehead, you know? And not stealing it. Stealing the show. Not ruining the show for your own gains, but knowing when you're given an opportunity, are you making the most of that opportunity? Or, you know, or even if your opportunity is you're going to lose 10 times in a row, are you making the crowd care that you're losing? Are the crowd happy to see you lose? Because there should always be a reason. You always do the best possible job in the role you've given, and don't bitch about it. You can still be a valuable member of the team, even if you're just losing all the time. And I'm very reticent to say jobbing, because don't get an ego in yourself. You know, like, if you're losing, you can still be valuable in loss as much as you can be invaluable in winning.
That's absolutely right. Everyone's got their place, and your place can change. You can be opening match one night and you can be main event champion 6 months later on. Everyone just needs to play their part. You've got a part for that point in time. And just do the part that you're asked to do to the best of the ability that you're asked to do it. And that's what gets you to work. Like I always say to people, getting a booking somewhere, that's great. Getting repeat bookings, that's the achievement.
And also as well, it's sort of like, why are you doing this? Are you doing this for yourself? Or are you doing this to get more bookings? Are you doing this to get a buzz about yourself? Are you making yourself marketable? Are you, I hate to resistant to use this, but are you building your brand?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You're your own advertiser. If you're just doing stuff that's self-indulgent, people will go, they're self-indulgent. And it's like, why would I watch something that you're doing for yourself? I want to do something that involves me.
And from a booker's perspective, like I've been booking now for the best part of a decade. If people are working just for their own highlight reel and just for themselves or to pop themselves, I've got no interest in using them, because I'm putting on a show with, you know, 10, 15 people on it for a bigger purpose, for some other thing and various things in that. If you're not wanting to be a part of that wider script, why do I want you in my movie?
And it's like anything that motivates you. It doesn't have to be wrestling. Watch as much wrestling as you can, all the older stuff and that. That's what I still to do this day. But I'll watch a film, I'll read a book, I'll listen to a bit of music. And if something really moves me, I'm like, why did that move me? What happened? What? And then I might look at my own face and go, what did my face do when I felt moved? And I'll just remember it, you know. Look, I love walking along. This sounds a bit weird now. I love walking along with headphones on. I'm not listening to anything. But if I see someone walking in a certain way, and I'm like, oh, a bit of a douche, shouldn't they? Well, okay, why are they walking? Are they drunk? What are they doing with their shoulders? What are they doing with their head? How are they talking? What is their body language like? Because from behind, I don't like them. So if I got round to the front of them, I'll look at them there. What are they, you know, not that they're going to give me a slap, but... Or are they really approachable? What are they doing that's nice? How are they, you know, always be endlessly curious about everything in life, because it might not, some of the stuff I've done might not even be in wrestling now, but I've used it in my acting, I've used it in my performance art. There's such, human nature is human nature, emotion is emotion. So stuff I've learned in wrestling I still use to this day. It's like, it's endlessly inventive and endlessly entertaining. You can always learn something if you're willing to. If you close yourself off and just go, it's not about me, then you won't learn anything, you know. And that's a shame, because you're not going to stop developing.
And the one final thing I'll put onto that as well is, with that match, is what we did in that match, we worked for that crowd, not at that crowd.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of people these days, and I pick them up on it when I'm on my shows, that they perform at the crowd. It's basically, hey, we've got this act, we're going to do all this stuff, sit there and watch it. And they just do stuff. And no, people sit on their hands, they don't react. And afterwards they're going, bad crowd. It's not a bad crowd at all. It's nothing to do with the crowd. It's not, some people have even said, it's just this place, you know, it's just this company. It's nothing to do with that at all. It's your work style is not what they want to see, or you're not asking them to come on the journey with you. That's this is what you do wrong. What we were doing there was working for them. You were falling on your ass. You were being embarrassed. They wanted to see that. They wanted to see me come back and have some fire and do some damage to you. We gave them all that. And then we took them on the ride of me getting beaten down, getting beaten up, getting taken advantage of, because that got them emotionally involved if they cared about me.
I've got two things to say. So first one is, like, I now listen. Like, the whole time, if I'm watching something, what makes me excited, this is why I love watching live shows, because live is completely different from watching it on TV, because you can see people unable to sit in their chairs. You see kids so full of excitement when a match ends or an interval, they start jumping up and down on the spot and trying to play wrestle with each other because they're entertained, they're enjoying themselves. They're not just looking at each other like, what did I bother to turn up for? You know, they're sugar rushed and they've got to get all this enthusiasm out. That's what's important to me. When someone comes backstage and goes, oh, you know, all they're talking about is how well they hit a move or whatever. And it's like, oh, we had a great one. They give each other a hug. I'm like, did you hear the crowd? And they're like, no. Oh, no, neither did I. And that's not me being a dick. It's like, if you're not entertaining them, I mean, not all matches are meant to be like fully bringing the house down. But if you're not entertaining them, then why are you doing it? And also the thing that I want to say as well, I want to thank you most for in that. Not only did you entertain the crowd, we listened to the crowd, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. But you also took care of me, you know, even though it looked like we were brutalizing each other. And I'm sorry, you know, we weren't on Instagram here thanking each other straight after the match. But like we did. You took care of me, you know. And I actually think we kept up kayfabe quite well. We didn't like thank each other online straight after it or that, you know, because no one needs to do that. You took care of me when you needed to, and we kept the mystique alive as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to get people buying into it. So why would they care about the final match if it's all about emotion and heat, if we've killed all the emotion and heat by posing backstage of each other, hugging, going, oh, look, he's got blood on him.
Yeah, you know, or like going straight backstage and taking pictures of each other. I mean, my thing as well is like, as soon as I got backstage, I see this happening all the time as well in big companies where they, you know, they're covered in blood and the first thing they do is look at the camera and give a smile or like a thumbs up, or they're straight backstage taking pictures of it for their Instagram. It's like, I just went backstage and had a shower because that it's, you've seen it. That's the art. The art is in the YouTube that or the video that people can carry on watching. But you don't need to see behind the curtain. That's for me. That's for you. That's not part of the performance. Sorry, audience, I love you. You pay my wages or whatever, but this bit isn't for you. That bit's for you. Understand where the barrier is and the line is. Have more confidence in yourself that you don't have to get exposed every part of yourself and every part of your business to be loved or be wanted. If you have a bit of mystique about you, people will be a lot more interested in you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Have some confidence.
But yeah, so yeah, it was fun watching that back. It was guns.
But yeah, no, it was really, mate, I think we should keep doing this. I'm gonna have to do another one on my podcast, and we'll have to do some here as well, because it's not just a nostalgia or ego feed for me. It's just really nice to relive this and just think, or maybe not all of it, maybe not that chair shot, but just, you know, things we did well, things we didn't do well, and just like lovely talking to you about this sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to pull these apart, and I thought we were going to be a lot more critical of it, to be honest, coming into it, but watching it back, I'm like, do you know what, considering a lot of the stuff that's accepted now,
yeah,
I can't be critical of that, because we made everything mean something. We sold everything simmered and boiled properly. There wasn't rushing through stuff. Nothing, there was nothing in that match that didn't make any sense or was done for the sake of it.
I think the thing that I really liked about it is, even though I was remembering in a weird sort of way that I did too much after I bled, and I didn't. It was like any sort of comeback I made, I was collapsing. I was just trying to push you away. I had nothing left, and you sold the bump through the table and stuff. So it like I say, I think personally, I mean, I'm in it, so I'm going to be a bit biased here. We're both in it, but I think it holds up extremely well, and I'm very, very proud of that. And, you know, very happy we got to do that. Like, this is the other thing about your art. It lives forever. Long after, if you asked me to go in there and do that match now, I'd be like, hell no. But like, we did it at that time, and that will last forever now. And, you know, people's memories, for as long as they're alive, they'll remember that.
People still talk about it now. People still talk back and go, oh, I remember that. That was so epic, that fight. Well, that's the goal.
It's exactly. That's it. Making memories for each other, but not self-indulgent memories. And, you know, doing your job, making sure the crowd are, if you know, emotionally invested and they feel something.
Exactly.
But you know.
All right, mate, I'll let you go because I think it's dinner time. So I'll give you a
And I'll do that as well. There we go. And
Oh, it's all gone blue. Yeah,
can I get that one up?
Yeah. Hey, look at that. We're so embarrassing. Right, thank you so much. It was great fun. This is a great way to kick off season 3, and let's do more of these. Let's get the other two on it. Let's get Sifu and Ollie on this as well.
Yeah, let's have another four-way dance watching a favourite bit of match. But it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. And we didn't go down the bitterness road today. Nothing but love. And I'll be seeing you very soon for some steak and waffles, mate.
Yeah, see you at the weekend for steak and waffles.
Take care, mate. All the best.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.